immunophysiology. Now, there's three intertwining processes. Intertwining, such a good word. Reminds me of macrame. The first process is inflammation. Now, does inflammation change?
Yes.
I mean, it's the same process, but it can be controlled. But it's essentially the same process. It's just a matter of how strong and where it is and how long it lasts. But it's the same process every single time. Now, that one process is going to be molded and adapted by the adaptive response. Now, the adaptive response is made up of two things. One is called cell-mediated. The other is called humoral, not humoral. Humoral. Now, cell-mediated, you're going to put right down next to that, you're going to say T cells. Next to humoral, you're going to write down antibody. Or what's the cell that produces antibodies? B cells, which turn into plasma cells. So when we talk about cell-mediated, what cells are we talking about? T cells. When we talk about humoral, we're talking about antibodies. So antibodies and T cells are going to guide inflammation. Inflammation, in turn, is going to allow these guys to do their job. Now, the non-specific response. Non-specific response usually begins, we're talking about inflammation, usually begins by recognizing common pathogenic features. What is the cell responsible for that? The D cell. The dendritic cell. So dendritic cells are responsible for recognizing common pathogen features and then attacking them. Other cells that can also recognize common pathogenic features? The two phagocytic cells we talked about, what are they? Neutrophils and macrophages. Now, once the inflammatory response begins, you're going to bring effector cells to the site. What are the effector cells that we're talking about? What did we say effector cells were? Cells that attack. So we have T cells, not B cells. So we have T cells, macrophages, and neutrophils. We're going to wall off the infection using clotting, and then we are going to prepare the tissue for healing. So once we begin the inflammatory response, we're going to bring white blood cells, effector cells, to the site. We're going to wall off the infection from the rest of the body so it doesn't spread. And then we are going to prepare tissue for healing. All right, the inflammatory response. See, I said all right. I can't help it. But I'm aware now, like Skynet. Local effects of chemokines and cytokines. Now, TNF-alpha is the major cytokine that macrophages produce. It's also produced by some other cells. It is an extremely powerful inflammatory mediator, and it's going to cause four things to happen. The first one is vasodilation. What is vasodilation responsible for in inflammation? What two symptoms or signs? Redness and heat. Expression of adhesion molecules. What were adhesion molecules again? So little molecules that white blood cells can stick to, and it helps get them out of the capillaries and into the tissue. Kind of like throwing a rope to a person in a river so they can swim to the shore. And it will also cause increased vascular permeability. What's the purpose of the increased vascular permeability? To allow proteins, what proteins we talked about in this very class? Antibodies, complement, and clotting factors to leak out into the tissue so they can work their magic. What is the symptom or sign that's going to be caused by that? Edema or swelling. then we're going to cause blood clots to form and wall off that area from the rest of the body. Now, this prevents the infection from spreading. It also gives dendritic cells time to get to the lymph node and activate T cells. So it's kind of like in a movie when there's a group of people trying to escape from the monsters and then one of them gets injured. He says, "Go on without me. You escape. I'll hold him off." That's what the clotting, that's what the clot is doing. It's trying to wall off that infection and give the dendritic cell time to go get help.
Is it the same idea as putting scar tissue in the area?
Similar, but not as permanent. So it'll do the same thing as a granuloma, but a granuloma is long term. This is short term, like a day or two. So, and it's not meant to be permanent, it's just meant to be a delaying action to give your immune system time to get going. The inflammatory response is going to take up a couple different things in the rest of your body. So, the first systemic effect is fever. Now, what is fever? High temperature. Temperature higher than 100 or 100.200 elevated temperature. What causes that elevated temperature? All right, so the hypothalamus tells... Oh, we just went over this the other day. Learned this in AMP2, right? You would think so. The hypothalamus tells the pituitary gland to tell the thyroid gland to tell your muscle cells in particular to not twitch, that would be shivering, but to generate energy. And that generating energy raises the temperature of the body. Now, the reason your body does that is three things. First of all, some pathogens do not work as well at high temperatures. So it actually inhibits their growth and function. The second thing it does is it enhances the immune response. Some chemical reactions need a slightly higher temperature to take place, and a lot of the immune reactions work better at higher temperatures. And then it also helps to protect the body from the effects of TNF-alpha. Now, the second systemic response is what we call the acute phase response. Next to acute phase response, you're going to write liver, or you could just circle the liver down here. So the acute phase is the release of what we call acute phase proteins by the liver. And there are how many? Three. It's actually four, but two of them do the same thing, so I lump them together. First one is C-reactive protein, or CRP. The next one is MBL, which we know better as mannose binding lectin. Gosh, we've already learned about these. This is like review. It's so easy. Now, the third one is a special lung surfactant that has antibacterial properties. And it's only produced during inflammation. So, acute phase is characterized by the liver doing what? Producing and releasing three special kinds of proteins. What are they again? CRP, mannose binding lectin, lung surfactants. And all three of these enhance the action of inflammation in the immune system. And CRP and MBL in particular, we learned, what do? They activate complement. All right. The next thing we're going to get is something called leukocytosis. What does that sound like? Increase in white blood cells. At the beginning of this class, we like chanted something for a while. What was that? White blood cell. Have you forgotten so soon? High white blood cells? Infection. High white blood cells? High white blood cells? All right, now what's the fancy Latin term for high white blood cell count? Leukocytosis. All right, and the last sign, systemic sign of infection, is something we call elevated erythrocyte sedimentation rate. Whew. What is a sediment? Okay, so it's little particulates that float in water. And when the water is still, what does sediment do? Settles to the bottom. Now, you can think of red blood cells as sediment because they float around in the blood, which is mostly water. Now, if you take a little sample of blood and you look at how long it takes for those red blood cells to settle to the bottom, that is called the erythrocyte sedimentation rate. And if you're cool, sed rate, or ESR. Now, in inflammation, because of all of the chemicals and chemical reactions that are going on, it takes longer for those cells to settle. So you can check for inflammation by looking at a sed rate. Now, does that tell you what kind of inflammation is going on? No. So it could be anything from an infection to an autoimmune disease to a transplant rejection. Who knows what's happening? But you do know that infection is happening. So a lot of times in the hospital or in a clinic, if we have someone who has kind of vague symptoms and we want to check to see if they're having an inflammatory process, we can check what level? Sed rate. So we can check for this. We also sometimes will check CRP levels, because if a person's not having inflammation, they should not have high CRP levels. All right, now let's talk about septic shock. Now, what did we say shock was? Twice now, and you still give me that look. You wanted me to remember shock? I thought you wanted them to remember shock. So what is shock? We talked about it just yesterday in health assessment. Less than 24 hours ago. Not enough blood pressure to allow for perfusion or to drive perfusion. So it's when the blood pressure drops so low that a person starts having trouble getting enough blood to the body. And the body starts to die because it doesn't have enough oxygen. It's got plenty of blood. It just can't push it around where it needs to. Now, septic shock, what does the word septic mean? Infectious. So a shock due to infection. And it's usually when the infection has reached the bloodstream. So it's all pretty much TNF-alpha's fault. Now, what does TNF-alpha do again? It causes vasodilation, it causes increased vascular permeability, and it induces clotting. Now, are these good things in a localized inflammation setting? Yes. Vasodilation gets more blood cells to the area. The increased permeability allows those plasma proteins to get into the tissue where they can work their magic. And the clotting keeps the infection from spreading. All very good things in the appropriate place. But if TNF-alpha escapes into the bloodstream because you now have bacteria in your blood, you start to release TNF-alpha into the blood. So now, vasodilation all over the body, what's that going to cause? Very low blood pressure, which could cause shock. At the same time, we're going to have decreased plasma volume, or we're going to have decreased plasma osmotic pressure because we've got proteins leaking out all over the body. So where's the little bit of fluid that's left going to go? It's going to go out into the tissues. So now we've got vasodilation causing blood pressure, and we also have decreased volume further causing low blood pressure. Is that a good thing for our patient? No. Now, at the same time, it induces clotting. Clotting all over your body inside your blood. Is that a good thing? Because now, whatever blood flow is left just becomes harder, because now you've got clotting all over the blood, all over your body, sludging up your blood. So when TNF-alpha gets into the bloodstream, that is extremely bad. And we call that septic shock. Now, this term right here, disseminated. What does the word disseminated mean? Spread about. So if you disseminate rumors, you are spreading rumors. If you disseminate coagulation, you are spreading coagulation. Intravascular. Inside the blood vessels. Coagulation, clotting. So what we're talking about is clotting inside the blood vessels throughout the body. Collectively, we know this as DIC. You must remember the term. You must be able to define it and tell us the problem. Now, it's a problem for two reasons. The first reason is that when you have DIC, it becomes harder to pump blood because it's thicker. But the worst problem is, what happens once you burn up all your clotting factors and all your platelets? Now you can't clot anymore. So how many of you ever seen a Civil War movie? A couple of us. What kind of guns did they use back then? Yeah, they were muskets and then rifles, but you had to load them from the muzzle, right? And it took like 30 seconds to a minute to do. So what was the technique? Did everyone shoot all their guns at once? No. Like a third of them would shoot, and then they would fall back, and then another third would shoot, and then they would fall back, and then the other third would shoot. So you always have some people who have a loaded rifle. Now what happens if everyone shot at once? The people on the other side could then just leisurely walk across the field and kill them with bayonets. So we don't want that, do we? Now, it's the same thing with clotting factors. Your body only wants to use a little bit of its clotting factors at any one time. Because once those clotting factors are all used up, guess what you get? Bleeding. So the problem with DIC is, first of all, it makes it harder to pump because it's thick. But then you burn up all your clotting factors, and now you begin to bleed to death. How many of you have started reading your coming plague? Machupo virus, how did it work? They bled to death. You want to know why? DIC. They clotted, burned up all their clotting factors, and then bled to death. So we're going to see DIC in septic shock, certain hemorrhagic fevers, and in pregnant women who have preeclampsia, or, well, eclampsia. So those are the three big places that you're going to see it. Well, anemia is lack of red blood cells, or not enough red blood cells or hemoglobin. So if a person's bleeding, that will cause anemia. But it doesn't cause anemia in and of itself. Any questions about septic shock and TNF-alpha?